is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hey, Hoopheads, wanted to take a minute to shout out our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. We've had their partnership manager and training specialist, Jefferson Mason, and marketing manager, Nick Bartlett, on the show in the past, and we couldn't be more excited about what they're doing for the game of basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market, and truly accelerate skill development faster than ever. Beyond efficient reps, Dr. Dish provides training expertise and versatility designed to develop complete players. The new Dr. Dish CT machine has further revolutionized basketball training with over 150 plus on-demand individual and team workouts from some of the best coaches and trainers in the game. These workouts include video instruction and combine game-like shooting drills with ball handling, conditioning, and agility drills. Along with workouts, the Dr. Dish training management system also provides stat tracking and analytics to track progress and ensure accountability. These are just a few reasons why top programs like Duke, North Carolina, Louisville, Florida, Baylor, and countless others are upgrading to Dr. Dish. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com. Follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. And make sure you mention the Hoopheads podcast to get $300 off your next Dr. Dish purchase. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get out and get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Our high school, 10 through 12, has about 250. And every Tuesday, Friday night, those kids are playing in front of 1,600 to 1,800 people in a packed gym that is the show.
Lee Wimberly has served as the head boys basketball coach at Manila High School in Arkansas since 2012. The Lions have compiled a 147-67 overall record and a 53-11 record and four conference titles in the 3A3 over the past 7 years. Coach Wimberly's teams have won two district tournament titles and the first two regional titles in school history. Before arriving at Manila, Coach Wimberly spent the previous three seasons as an assistant to Jerry Bridges at Cabot High School, the second largest high school in Arkansas, and 7 years as an assistant at Wynn High School under Bobby Gross. His teams at Manila have developed a reputation for their toughness and being one of those teams that no one wants to face. If you like what you hear on the Hoopheads podcast, please leave us a 5-star rating and review wherever you listen to our show. Thank you for being a part of Hoopheads Nation. As we grow the Hoopheads pod, please help support the cause by sharing our show with your friends in the coaching profession. We feel there's no better podcast out there to help you grow as a coach in a format that is both entertaining and informative. Visit our website, hoopheadspod.com, to see every episode we've ever recorded. Please hit that subscribe button so you never miss an episode. Get your notebook out now so you can take some notes as you listen to this episode with Lee Wimberly, head boys basketball coach at Manila High School in the state of Arkansas. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Linsing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel. And tonight we are pleased to welcome from Manila High School in Arkansas, Lee Wimberly. Lee, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Absolutely. We're very excited to have you on, get a chance to talk to you about all the great things you've been able to do in your coaching career, dig into how you've built your program. I want to start out by going back in time to when you were a kid. Talk to me a little bit about how you got into the game. What made you fall in love with it at first?
Okay. Grew up with a older brother, and really baseball was my thing. I didn't need to be taught how to hold a bat. I didn't need to be taught how to throw, catch, any of that stuff. And so I became very competitive at an early age, and basketball was not, I wasn't good at it because it took a lot of time and took a lot of effort, and I didn't want to do that. I mean, baseball was easy, and I was like, forget this stuff. And I was about 5'4" in the 8th grade, a little chubby. And hit about a 7-inch growing spurt in between my 8th and 9th grade year. And we had a coach move in who is still coaching to this day here in Arkansas. Has won 2 state titles with Greene County Tech. Currently is at Melbourne. Has been at various stops throughout Arkansas, Missouri, Tennessee. He moved in right before my 9th grade year and came out to a baseball game and said, you know, at this point in time, I was almost 6'1" going into 9th grade. And he said, you play basketball? And I said, well, I'm on the team. And you know,
define it loosely, right?
What do you mean by apply? I'm out there. Yes, absolutely. And he said, well, I want to see you up there this summer. And so I started going, and he started paying attention and started teaching me things. And it didn't take long for me to realize that this is what I wanted to do as a player. I had played football, baseball, all that up until then. Went ahead and played all three of them my ninth grade year. And then after that, started concentrating on basketball. I went ahead and played baseball because it didn't take a lot of my time. But with Coach Bolin there, he spent a lot of time with me and showed me some drills that I did at home. You know, I can remember asking for my main present in Christmas, I wanted a floodlight and a basketball goal at home so that I could play at nighttime.
That's awesome.
And so, you know, it was something that I really enjoyed. And then whenever I did become competitive and become, you know, pretty good player as a point guard, and I started, you know, fell in love with the cheering, the crowds, the girls, you know, all of it. It was yep. fantastic. You know, in football, you always had your head in the helmet. Baseball, there weren't but 100 people out there. And basketball, you got a lot, you know, in Northeast Arkansas, that's kind of a big deal. So just really, you know, after that year, I got to play a year with my brother when he was a senior and I was a sophomore. We made the regional for the first time ever in school history that year. So it was a lot of fun. And then just kind of continued to grow from there. And, you know, I've had a lot of good coaches in my life, not just that I've worked under, but Coach Bolin obviously was a factor in me deciding eventually to become a coach. But also Coach Gross came in, Bobby Gross. He was a great player at ASU. He was an all-conference player. They went up to the Carrier Classic in Syracuse, and he likes to joke that he was the only all-tournament pick that didn't play in the NBA. Mark Macon and Derek Coleman and Bobby Gross. And but he
those two,
came
those
along,
are two pretty good. Those are two pretty good names to be associated with.
Pretty good names, pretty, you know. I mean,
Temple and Syracuse.
Yes, pretty solid. So he came along and needed some needed to finish out his student teaching. So he kind of signed on with us my senior year and helped Coach Bolin coach us. And he fit right in with us. Lived with my brother and some of our other friends that were a little bit older than us. And then he just brought a different style. We'd always run the flex and we were kind of slow, you know, bring it up, make a good pass, make sure you get the good shot. And he brought in a little bit more up-tempo, motion offense. Now, we didn't ever change from man to man. We stayed with that. But he kind of made it different for us. And I think without him, I probably wouldn't have gotten the scholarship to play college, but he kind of opened the game up for me and allowed me to do some more stuff, a little bit more freedom. And so I was seen by a coach that had signed a kid that played with me the year before from our same high school and a little NAIA school in Walnut Ridge, Arkansas, Williams Baptist, and spent 3 years there. From there, after coaches changed after my junior year, and I decided, I knew at that point I wasn't playing professional basketball.
And right.
So transferred to Harding University, which has got one of the best, business schools in the country, and got my accounting degree, and became an accountant. So, you know, at this point, I wanted to make money.
I understand. I get it. Are you saying high school coaches aren't raking in lots of dough? Is that what you're saying?
Basketball was not on the top of my list for money making schemes, and so yep. I went with accounting and ended up back farming with my father. Within 8 months, they put me in a cubicle, and I had been raised on a farm, about 5,000 acre cotton farm. We raised watermelons and. I was like, this cubicle's, you know, choking me to death. And
I can imagine.
Oh my gosh. And so when I got back farming, it didn't take long. There was a coach at my hometown, Tony Davis, that needed an elementary coach, and he asked if I was interested, and I said, well, I am. And I didn't know he was going to give me 4th, 5th, and 6th boys and girls, but he did, and had a blast. I loved it. Loved the kids. Loved the, I guess, you know, the different, you never got tired. You never had the same thing happen day after day. And to me, that's still very appealing, is that, you know, something every day is going to be something that you haven't seen before. I mean, you're dealing with anywhere from 12-year-old to 18-year-old boys. They're going to do something phenomenally stupid every day and keep you on your toes. And I love that. I hate being bored. And so that kind of grabbed me. And from there, I went ahead and got my non-traditional license in Arkansas as a teacher, coach, got my coaching endorsement. And Bobby Gross, who had coached me as a player, had an opening for a junior high coach at Wynn, which is a 5A school in Northeast Arkansas. And I went there and was his junior high boys coach for 3 years. After that 3 years, he moved me up to his assistant and was with him for 4 years before I went to Cabot. Cabot's a 7A school. Arkansas, you have 7 classifications. We have a very large discrepancy in numbers when you get up to your bigger classifications, your larger classifications. No one, if you looked at our numbers of schools, would think that Arkansas needs 7 classifications.
Right.
And I don't think we do. I think 5 would do the trick, but our 16 7A schools are humongous. And so they're kind of on their own. Got a chance to go there and work under Jerry Bridges, who is a legend, in my opinion. He won state titles at 3 different schools on 3 different levels, Class A, Class 4A, Class 7A. And he took another 6A school to a class or to a final and got beat in his career too. And when I saw the opportunity to go work with him, I just thought it'd be great. And I didn't know at that time when I went over there and took that junior high job that his assistant was ready to get out. And so I kind of fell into his assistant job and worked with him for 2 years and then made my way to Manila. And that's where I am now. I've been for, this is my 8th year.
All right. So let's go back to the start of your coaching career.
Okay.
And think about that first opportunity you had working with the 4th, 5th, and 6th grade, both genders. What was something that, if you look back on it, that you were, that you felt like you were pretty good at right out of the gate? And what's something that when you look back at it now, you're like, man, I really had no idea what I was doing with those kids?
Teaching offense, I was awful. I was absolutely awful. And I thought, you know, I knew how to play. I was like, I can teach these kids offense all day long. Was terrible at it. And couldn't understand why, you know, they didn't see what I saw. And I still ask that from time to time now. But then you have to pull yourself back and you go, you know, what is it that they know? So I think the thing that I immediately knew I was good at is, even though, and this may say a lot about me, is relationships with the kids. You know, I mean, I hit it off with them, even though they were 4th, 5th, and 6th graders. There was always that rapport with them. I didn't treat them. I treated them, and I still tell my elementary coaches this to this day. To those 4th graders, 4th grade basketball is the most important thing on earth to them during that time period. So treat it like that. And, you know, when you're a high school coach, when you're a college coach, when you're, you know, you look at different coaches and you go, and never do you want to look down on anything. And so I wanted to make sure when I was doing that, that those kids thought that I thought that that was the most important thing on earth. And so I always kind of had a rapport with them because I think that I made them feel like they were important. The sport that they were playing was important. The games that we were playing, even though there may have been 190 people in the stands, those games were important. And that was something that I was quickly aware of my abilities in. Now, going back to, you know, teaching the game, I had to go back and basically teach myself, you know, where was I at that age? What was I good at? What was I not good at? And obviously I was not good at a lot of things in fourth, fifth, sixth, even all the way up to eighth grade. So I went back to the beginning, started teaching them fundamentals. And I still do the fundamentals in senior high basketball now that I did with fourth graders at Rector 18 years ago. A lot of two ball drills, yep. You know, a lot of things that we did. And I'll tell these kids that, and they're just kind of looking at me like, we know, we know, and we hate them, but we're going to do them. And
right.
So, yeah, that's something that sticks out. I, you know, I just always kind of have had a rapport with my kids. And that was the only time I ever coached girls, but I thoroughly enjoyed it.
All right. So two things. One is that piece of advice that you shared, which was to make it seem like wherever you are, whatever kids you're working with, that is the most important thing in the moment. The first person that we had on the podcast that shared that piece of wisdom with us was Coach Showalter from USA Basketball. And since he said it the first time, and then we've had numerous guests since then who have echoed that same sentiment of you have to make sure that wherever you are, that is where the big time is. That's what you need to be focusing on. And, you know, you hear too many stories about, you know, guys who are assistants someplace or they think they're at a level that's below them. And then they're not necessarily putting forth tremendous effort. And everybody that we've talked to who's had success and talks about how important the relationships are always say and echo exactly what you said, which is if I'm doing the best job I can for that group of fourth, fifth, and sixth grade kids, then one, I'm getting better as a coach. If I'm giving them my best, then I'm improving as a coach. And then number two, if I'm giving my best as a fourth, fifth, or sixth grade coach, and there's somebody else above me who's a part of that program, who's looking at me and saying, well, what guys do I want to give another opportunity to? Are you going to give it to the guy who's making where they are the big time? Or are you going to give it to the guy who's, you know, pouting and sulking because he or she thinks they should be at a higher level? So I think that was a great piece of advice. And then the other thing that I pulled out of what you said, talking about relationships, I go back to what you mentioned when you first talked about Coach Bolin tonight, and you said, you know, he came in and he spent time with me. Mm-hmm. And as soon as you said that, that jumped out at me right away, because I think about what makes somebody a successful coach at whatever level. And I think obviously there's technical skill you have to have. There's people skills you have to have. And we're going to dive into all that as we keep going in the conversation. But I think the bottom line is successful coaches at every level are willing to put in the time, whether that's with their team, whether that's with their individual players, getting to know them. And that really struck me when you said, that was the first thing you said about him was he spent time with me. You didn't say, oh, he, you know, he was so great at teaching me how to do a crossover, or man, he was super at teaching me, you know, wing denial defense.
Right.
That what you remembered was he spent time with me. And I think that's something that is so important for coaches to remember.
I agree with you. I think no matter what level you're on, obviously, the kid does not care what you know. They really don't until they know that you care about them. And I know that's a saying that people use, but it is so true, especially at our level, at a high school level, when a lot of these kids know that when they hang up their, you know, whether it's football cleats and helmets or their basketball shoes and their uniform, they're done. So we've got to make it. Now, I'm hard on my kids. I make them walk the line, but I do that because I think that's how they're going to be successful in life. But in turn, when they have problems, I have an open door policy and they know it. Off the floor, I'm laid back. I'll listen. I'll talk to them. But that's the thing, you know, that's what with Coach Bolin, he never treated me anything less than a person off the floor. You know what I'm saying? And so he just, from day one, he made me feel important. And that, up to that point in basketball, I definitely had not felt important because I wasn't any good. And right. So he made me, even though I still wasn't good yet, he made me feel like I could be. And and I still look back at that now when I deal with some seventh graders, some, you know, some junior high kids who don't have the skill yet, but you see some promise in them and you say, you know, be careful what you say to them because they'll remember it. And I've got a new junior high coach who's doing a fantastic job. He's 24 years old. It's his first job. And he's got that. I mean, he understands it, and I didn't have to tell him. And that's wonderful. When I got him, I didn't. You know, I wasn't sure. You never know what you're going to get when you get a new coach. And I got lucky. I got really lucky that he understands it. And I never had to say anything to him about it. But those kids respect him. They know that he's there for them. And I think that's the key. I think relationships, yeah. You know, are the key because we. Basically, everybody knows basketball. I mean, you know, if you're coaching basketball, you know basketball. Now, can you teach it? I don't know. Even if you can't teach it well, if you have a good relationship with those kids, they're going to bust their tail for you. And so, you know, I think that's the key to any coach being successful. And then, you know, obviously, once you get into the X's and O's, you still got to know what you're doing. But the relationship's the key.
Yeah, I think if you can build that relationship with your kids, that's, you know, you're 75% of the way there in terms totally of being able to have success. Because then I think you can get them to play hard for you because yep. They know that when you push them and when, you know, as you described it, you make them toe the line, they understand where you're coming from. And by communicating with them and showing them that they're more than just a basketball player that can help you as the coach to win games, but you're actually somebody who, you know, the coach cares about, not only just on the basketball floor, but off the basketball floor. To me, that makes all the difference. And I think especially, you know, you just described having a young guy on your staff that gets that, you know, it's so important. And I think nowadays, you know, you go back 15 or 20 years, and I think that those relationships are probably still just as important, but there weren't as many coaches who I think develop those relationships in the same way. There was much more of sort of that old school mentality,
the military coach mentality, of,
you know, yeah, for sure.
Right.
For sure. And I think that, you know, that has changed as people have become more educated. There's just been more information out there about, you know, how building those kinds of positive relationships, not only does it have an effect on, you know, your relationships with the kids, but, you know, again, if you have those good relationships, it impacts winning today. And then it also helps those kids succeed tomorrow because they know that they've got an adult in their corner that's looking out for them and wants them to do better. And that's ultimately, I think if you can get your kids to buy into the fact that when I coach you hard, I'm not picking on you. I'm not, you know, trying to, you know, get after you just for no reason. I'm trying to do this because I see potential in you and I think you can be better. And when you can get kids to believe that, then you've really got something. It sounds like that's what you've been able to do.
We've been successful with some. And, you know, Manila is a basketball town. It is a basketball school, always has been. But as far as athlete-wise, we're not overrun with athletes by any means. But we've got kids that will work their blue collar. We've got two steel mills in our county that a lot of their parents work at. And so when you're willing to put the time in with them and they see it and they see that you're not with your family, I've got three children of my own, and when they see that I take time away from them to come up there and spend with them, they understand that. They get it, and I'm a coach that I have no problem telling my kids I love them. I do it often. Last night, I had a kid that started for me for 2 years now, and I expected him to really have a great year this year, and he's off to a slow start. And he scored 2 points last night. And I just looked at him and I was like, man, I don't know what to tell you. I said, I do know this. I still love you. Whether you're scoring 15 or two, I'm still going to love you. But I'd really like you to start scoring 15. And he just started laughing a little bit, you know, and talked to him this morning. And I said, you know what? You're just thinking too much. Just play the game. And he's a really intelligent kid. He gets things. I mean, he gets the big picture. But it's those things like that you can't tell people, you know, like, what's coaching like? You know, is it fun? Is it hard? It's everything. It's everything. It's fun. It's hard. It's frustrating. There's times when I think that what was I doing when I got in this business? You know, and then there's times when I'm like, what would I do without this? What would I do without these relationships I have with these kids that I've made over the years? And so when people ask me, you know, is this something I should look for? You know, I've got a kid that played for me here coaching my elementary right now as he's finishing up college, and he's wanting to go into coaching. And I said, make sure that you're going into it for the right reasons. And I think he gets it too. You know, I mean, I was hard on that kid. He was a point guard for me, undersized, but was a bulldog. And I had to tell him basically the other day, I said, you can't coach your fourth graders like I coached you when you were in senior high, man. Let you know, ease up just a little bit. But he's doing a fantastic job as well. But it's the relationship. He'll come over and he'll talk to me. He'll ask me questions. And it's those relationships that keep us sane in this business, honestly, because some of the other things can make you lose it and ask yourself, you know, what am I? There's got to be a better way to make a living than this at times.
completely understand.
But those relationships with those kids and knowing that you're making an impact, that supersedes all the bad stuff. And every job has its bad sides. And so, when we dwell on those as coaches, then that's our fault. We're being the ones, I tell my kids all the time, you can control your attitude, and you can control your work ethic. Well, the same goes for me. You know, if I want to be pissed off all the time, then I can be, but that's my choice. And, you know, I'm cheating them and I'm cheating me. And so I feel like, you know, they understand, when I push them that it's not me waking up in the morning going, okay, I'm going to be mean to this kid today.
Right.
They see the bigger picture, and that's come through, you know, me watching them. I've been here long enough now that my seniors were in fourth grade when I got here. So I've watched them grow up, and was not the plan at all. I did not plan on being here this long. But it has worked out, and you know, when you get to stay somewhere long, that's the beauty of it. You get to see these kids and they get to see you when they're young, be nice. You know, I can remember having them in basketball camp and just being as nice as I could to them. And then they start playing for me 10th grade or so. And they go, hey, you're not near as nice as you were.
Where'd that nice guy go?
I was like, yeah, it's like, nice, yeah, exactly. You were paying me money back then. And so it's been great. You know, it's not for everybody. Coaching's not, I have a saying, and I don't go by, this was something I was going to hit on. I hate hashtags. I get called old because I hate hashtags. And one of my friends the other day, they said, you do realize that by hating hashtags, there's no point in you being on Twitter. And I went, wrong. I put information out there. I don't need hashtags.
Right.
But one of the things that I've said, if you're going to be a good coach, you got to have three things, period, the end. Three things: thick skin, a hard head, and a big heart. And if you've got those three things, you can make it in this business. Now, sometimes those first two get tried very hard by whether it be parents, whether it be, you know, administration, whether it be fans. And then, of course, your hard-headedness gets in the way sometimes, you know. But that big heart, as long as it's there and it's real, then to me, You got it whipped, and you're going to be fine.
Head Start Basketball, along with members of the Jay Billis Skills Camp staff, will be hosting the very first Prime Skills Camp, an affiliate of the Jay Billis Skills Camp that is held annually in Charlotte, North Carolina. Prime Skills Camp will take place on the campus of Western Reserve Academy, just outside of Cleveland, Ohio, in partnership with the Jay Billis Skills Camp. Prime Skills will be designed for boys rising to grades 6 through 9 and will take place June 26th through the 28th. Prime Skills Camps will mirror the Jay Billis Skills Camp in daily programming, teaching, coach-to-camper ratio, and quality of instruction. Prime Skills Camp brings all of the team-oriented individual instruction, focus on the fundamentals, and high-level coaching to young men aspiring to a high school varsity basketball experience. This camp is operated by Billis Camp veterans and includes the Jay Billis Coaches Development Program alongside the camp, ensuring that the quality of teaching and coaching at this camp is second to none. Please visit headstartbasketball.com or jaybilliscamps.com for more information or to get registered.
All right. So I want to ask you two things.
Okay.
And I'll ask you the first one, and then hopefully I'll remember the second one after you get done with your with the answer to the first one. So talk to me a little bit about, you mentioned, again, we talked about time, and then you talked about spending time away from your own family to spend time with your team and your players. And I think that a theme that's come across, especially for high school coaches that we've talked to, is that challenge of work-life balance. And I maintain that, you know, over the last 15 or 20 years, the baseline of the amount of time that you have to put in as a high school coach, if you want to be successful, has risen dramatically, because you've got to organize stuff for your kids and get them open gyms, and you got to get them to organize into a summer league, and you got to make sure that they're getting their workout in. Whereas you go back 20 or 30 years ago, and high school coaches, you know, some of them are maybe doing a little bit of that, but for the most part, kids were playing on their own and they were finding ways to, you know, get some pickup games, which don't really exist very much anymore. So as a result, you as the coach are having to put in a ton of time. So just talk to me about, a little bit about how you approach that work-life balance idea, and just maybe give everybody out there an idea of the amount of time that you put in kind of day to day with your program.
In Arkansas, we have a 2-week dead period during the summer. That's it. And so if you're not working, someone else is, and you're falling behind. So our schedule, once school ends, now, you know, I'll start June 1st. Let's say, you know, we get out of school May the 27th. June 1st, we start a 4-day-a-week lifting / practice 2 hours a day with my senior high kids. Then we bring our junior high kids in for about 90 minutes of skill work, shooting, you know, the finer things. I do not lift junior high kids, because it's just a preference of mine, because I still think they're growing. I think we put too much pressure on ligaments, you know, things that, some injuries that could happen that don't need to yet. And so we do a lot more of basketball with them. Now my 2 hours of my junior or my senior high kids, we'll spend that. It just depends. Some days will be a defensive day. Some days will be an offensive day. But we lift 4 days a week, and I give them off Friday, Saturday, Sunday. I'm lucky enough to be in a place where I'm on a 245-day contract. So I say lucky enough. I get paid to be up there, but I've got to be up there. So we bring in seventh graders. Any kid that's in our elementary program that wants to come up there, we leave it open. I'm there every day, basically during the summer, from 8:30 to 3. Girls coach, same. We have two facilities now that we can use at the same time, but we have not had that until this year. So we spend a lot of time during the summer, and then we get 8 playing days during the summer. So I like to put about 2 or 3 playing days in June so that we can get some practice before we go play, get them out of baseball, you know, straight out of baseball, put them in there. Get them back in shape before we go anywhere. And then in July, I try to get about 3 or 4 more this year. You know, we get 8 playing days. This year we played 7. Somebody asked me, are you not going to play your last day? And I said, the places I can go are far off and I don't want to do it. I'd rather stay here and practice and lift. And so, Arkansas is unique in that. I know a lot of states have, you know, longer dead periods. I know a lot of states have, you know, just June and dead, you know, July's dead. That's not the case with us. What I'll do at the end of the summer, the week before we start back to school, I give them off. And then when we start back to school, we start right back up. So our preseason starts August the 20th, whatever. We'll spend from August the 20th to about October the whatever a month is away from our first game. We will spend, you know, preparing our bodies for the season as far as lifting, plows, you name it, we've tried it. And then a lot of skill work. And one of the things we have to do is we have to be able to shoot the ball well where we are. We play against a lot of athletic teams that are faster than us, bigger than us, and we've got to be able to make shots. And so we shoot a ton. And so that's what we do until up until October. So then once, of course, October gets here, we start full practices. And what people, I don't think people understand is that, you know, during the summer, they think we're off. Well, if you're a teacher, you get off some, but you still have to do professional development, et cetera. But as a coach, like I said, I'm there 8:30 to 3.
You just said you were there 8:30 to 3 every day, and that's your off season.
That's my off season. That's correct. That is the off season. And I still teach. I teach health two times a day, two periods a day, and then I've got a PE class, and then I do my AD stuff for two periods. And then I'm in there. My assistant is the head 7th grade and head junior high, but I'm with him during those two periods. And then my athletic period is the last period of the day. We start usually about 2:45, finish practice about 4:45. And then if we lift, you know, try to lift 2 days a week during the season. If we lift, we get out of there about 5:15, 5:20. So, you know, it's a full day. And then you got to throw in the games two times a week, 30 times a season, hopefully a couple more than that. And then you give them about 2 or 3 weeks off before spring break. And then when you come back from spring break, you start it all over again. And that was not the case when I played. You know, our coach, we had a key. He gave us a key. And when we wanted to go play pickup, we went up, opened the gym, and we played pickup. That just doesn't happen anymore. And so we have to be the ones that make sure our kids are in the gym. And one of the ways I do it, I reward them. I give, you know, like I make goals on the – of course, we have, you know, a gun, and we use the gun. It's and they all have their own numbers, and we can put it in the computer. And I have a 6,000, 8,000, 10,000, and 12,000 shot club during the summer. And, you know, those younger kids see the older kids doing it, and they're like, oh, I want to be a part of that. And so that's helped us get them in there outside of even the practice time that we have. I've got kids that come up after practice and they'll say, my dad's going to go up to the gym with me. Is that okay? As long as an adult's with you, I'm fine with that. I go up there with them when I get home sometimes. If my wife's still, she's a nurse, and if she's still at work, my oldest son lives with me. My other two live with my ex-wife. So he's here. He plays for me. He doesn't go to the gym near enough. I'll just go ahead and say that. But he's a great kid, and he's a good football player, and that's his sport, and I'm fine with that. But, yes, the amount of time that we actually have to oversee now is greater than what I experienced as a player from my coaches. But it was just because that wasn't the norm. Right. There weren't team camps. We have team camps going all the time in Arkansas during the summer. You can find a team camp every week during the summer, except for the two dead weeks. And those 2 dead weeks are built around 4th of July so that people get – and then we have a 3-day dead period at Christmas. And so outside of that, we're working. And we're working. We really – the weight room has been a big key to our success. I think that's one thing you can control. Of course, and I like to be able to control things. And you get in that room, and it doesn't lie. You know, you can't skip reps, and then whenever we get ready to max again, your numbers go up. So it's been really good to us, and I harp on it a lot. But I've seen the benefits of it. So the kids have seen the teams in front of them benefit from it. So they just kind of that's just part of it. And so yeah, it's very time consuming. And you've got to want to do it. It's not for the faint of heart. Because some parents are wanting to go on vacations here and there, and you're like, well, you've got the dead periods, and they're like, yeah, that's not when we work in the real world. That's not when it, and I'm like, okay, but I'm just saying there'll be 12 other kids here. And, but I've got a great community, great parents to work with. And most of them understand, that we're going to work and they buy into it. And, the kids like the 3-day weekend. So 4 days they are busting their tail, and then I'll give them the Friday, Saturday, Sunday off, and then they come back Monday ready to roll.
All right. So I'm saving my second part of my question. I still have it in the back of my head.
Okay.
So I haven't lost it yet. Okay. But I want to ask you to go along with what we were just talking about. So what one of the things that is clearly coming across from you is that you are not just the coach of Manila High's varsity basketball team. You are the architect of a program all the way down to the elementary school youth level. Can you talk a little bit about how you have your youth program set up and then how hands-on direct you are with your interactions with those kids down in the elementary school and middle school?
Yes. When I got here, we had parents as coaches, and quickly I saw that, you know, whenever they get to seventh grade, certain kids, maybe their kids, had been pushed a little harder and were a little bit better, and we were having some kids falling behind. So that was one of the first things I went to our superintendent at the time, and I was like, I'd really like to get parents out of it and let me, you know, pick some people, you know, to coach. And well, I've been lucky enough that we've had a couple of people on staff who were able to coach, that we had certified teachers, coaches coaching for the last 5 years. And then this year, I was able to get one of my ex-players for the first time. I am visible at that age, but I am not very hands-on because they're going to see plenty of me for 6 years. And that's why it's important that they see me a little bit, but not too much, and they see me in a different setting than what they're going to see me from 7th through 12th. And even 7th through 9th, I'm the assistant. And what I mean by that is I get to be the good guy sometimes.
Right.
Now, when my junior high coach and I work together, great. And I've been lucky. I've had three junior high coaches, my third one, and all three of us have worked very well together. The one I had when I got here, he's still here. He's an assistant principal now. He's been here for 20 years. He graduated from Manila. So I've known him my whole life pretty much. And I remember him playing. You know, he was a little bit older than me, but I remember playing against Manila back when I was a kid, and he was, you know, in senior high when I was in junior high, and what kind of player he was. So when I got here, we knew each other. You couldn't find two different people than John Deaton and I. He's one of the nicest human beings you ever met on your earth, on this earth, and laid back, but can teach the game of basketball, and that's all I wanted. I was like, just teach it however you want to teach. You don't need to scream, you don't need to yell. That's your, you know, you do it your way. But this is what I want taught and how I want it taught. And so that's, you know, I do have to, at times I went, you know, I did talk to my, like I said, I talked to one of my ex-players who's coaching now and told him, you know, Matthew, this is what I want done. You do it however you want it done, but this is the finished product I want to see. And I've been lucky in that. I will go ahead and just tell you, having the people that I've had in that program, and then we have a guy in town that has coached elementary sports for us, boys, girls. I think he said he started when he was 19, and he's at least, I hope he hears this, he's at least 10 to 12 years older than I am. So he's probably around 55 years old, and he has no kids of his own, but he's on the school board, and he loves Manila. And so he has helped so many kids throughout the years. And so when I got here, he was actually helping two of the teams at the time. And I asked him to stay on as my sixth grade coach and then help me kind of develop my fourth and fifth grade coach. And he did for 2 years. And then he gave that up to that guy. And then he started coaching all three. And then Matthew's doing two now. And we're hoping he'll take over all three next year. And so, and then when they get seventh grade, my first 2 years, I was the head seventh grade. I wanted them by myself. So that I could kind of get in the stuff that I wanted to get in and the way I wanted it in. After that, since that point, I have been the assistant seventh grade. But I'm in every practice from 7 through 12, yes. I'm in there. I'm visible. I'm on the floor when needed. I've told my assistant, hey, use me just like I use you in senior high if you need me. And, you know, I want them to see that I'm invested not just in my senior high team, but also in those kids because they are our future. And so it's been a great, this town couldn't have been more accommodating when it came to what I wanted to do as far as build a program.
Building a program is so different from coaching a team because there's just so much more that goes into it. And I think this is another thing that people, whether it's parents or just people who are observers of high school basketball, I think sometimes they forget how important it is to be able to foster and develop those relationships with kids from an early point in their career where they see you, they get to know you, they want to become a part of it. And I think that's something that oftentimes in programs that aren't as successful, you don't see that aspiration of kids who are in fifth or sixth grade who come to the varsity games on Friday night or Saturday night and say, man, I can't wait until I can put that uniform and run out while the pep band's playing the fight song. And I think that when you can develop that and foster that and you're visible and the kids know you and they know, hey, someday I want to play for Coach Wimberly. I want to be up at the high school and be a part of that program and be able to experience that. To me, that's such a huge factor in developing a K to 12 basketball program. Whereas if I'm just coaching my varsity team and I'm not making myself available to the kids who are coming up through my program, I think it's really difficult to succeed. And to your point that you talked about earlier, does that take a lot of time? Absolutely it does. And is that something that if you were a high school coach 25 years ago that you had to do? Probably not. But today, if you want to have success, to me, what you just described, everything that you're doing with your younger kids, to me, that's almost a non-negotiable if you want to be successful.
Yes. I'll tell you right now, one of our school board members and our superintendent, they both have sixth graders. So while we're trying to groom Matthew, they said, we'll coach the sixth grade team if you'd like us to. And I said, I think that'd be fantastic. And then y'all can kind of watch Matthew. And I will be, and I've gone to more of their practices than I have Matthew's. And the school board member, he's called me a couple times. They had a kickoff. And he wanted me to speak at it, and I went in there and really talked to the kids more than I did the parents, and just told them, how much I was looking forward to them moving up the following year, but to really enjoy this year, and every time they step on the floor, enjoy the game. And I think parents today, and I've got a younger son who is a very good football player, very aggressive, and I try to be the quiet parent, and I want him just to have fun, just play the game because you love it. And it's hard for parents now because I think of social media, of things being out there about these other kids, and they feel like, well, if I'm not posting about my son, then I'm cheating my son. Well, in my opinion, the coach should be doing that for you. I should be posting about our players. I should be selling our players to college coaches. You shouldn't have to. You should be able to sit back and enjoy your kids while they're still here because they're about to be gone. And I had this conversation with a dad yesterday. He got so angry at some of the calls last night. And his son is our point guard, and he is the best player I've ever coached. He's got a chance to be a Division II point guard, I believe. He's about 5'11 and a half. If he was 6'1", there's no doubt. We've got a few coaches or a few schools around here that are on him pretty good. I believe that he's going to get the opportunity. So we were talking and he said, I got so angry the other night. I said, Brad, just think about it like this. If you, during that time that you're so mad, you don't even get to enjoy how smooth, how good your kid is. And he said, you're right. And he said, I'm missing it, and he's going to be gone next year. And I said, yes. So sit back. If the refs need to get worn out, let me do it. And I said, you enjoy it. And he says, it's just so hard for me. And I get that, because I do. I'm the same way with my oldest son in football. I have to catch myself at times at being the parent. And you know, I don't fault parents. I'm not one of those guys that, you know, think parents are now. Do I think they overstep their bounds? Yes, but I don't think they do it on purpose. I think they do it out of just sheer love for their kid and blindness sometimes, obviously.
Right.
But I don't think it's to attack or to hurt coaches. Does it? Yes. Can it undermine us at times? Yes. Can it run us off at times? Yes. But that's not their 95% of them. That is not their goal. Their goal is just to do what's best for their son. They just forget that we have 14 sons on that team.
Right.
And, you know, and that's the part where, you know, usually if you can get a parent a day later and say, hey, come see me tomorrow. Let's both calm down. Let's talk about it. Almost always works out. Almost always. Now, not always, but almost always. And, you know, that's the thing. Here, I've had great support from administration. I've had great support from parents. And like I told you earlier, it's a blue-collar town. We got about five. I'd say, now the sign out, you know, on the edge of town says 4,000. The school district itself, we have about 6,000 kids. But, I mean, 6,000 people to draw from. Our school district has about 1,200 kids. Our high school, 10 through 12, has about 250. And every Tuesday, Friday night, those kids are playing in front of 1,600 to 1,800 people in a packed gym that is the show. And like you were saying earlier, those fifth and sixth graders, they're there and they're seeing it and they're wanting to be a part of it. So that has driven our success. You know, the more and more I see as these kids keep coming up, you know, last year was my first group of sixth graders that I had had that, you know, that I got here. They were sixth graders and then they ended up last year graduating and finished with 23-6, conference championship, got upset. We didn't really get upset. The other team got upset in their district. And so when we played them in the regional, we were both, they'd gone 16-0 in their conference. We'd gone 15-1 our conference. They were sitting there 26-4. We were 23-5. And one of us had to lose, and it was us. And so it's just a bad draw for both of us. And so I'm seeing the benefits of it now, going back to that first year. And I was lucky that I had a group of kids that bought into it the first year, and we had some early success. And so that led to these younger kids saying, hey, I want to be a part of that.
Yeah, when you have that great environment like you described.
Oh, it's incredible.
There's nothing better. I mean, it's so much fun to play and coach in front of a packed house. And I mean, a packed house could be if your gym seats 500 and you put 500 people in there.
We go on the road and one of our biggest rivals is Rivercrest, and they seat probably 1,000 people. One of the loudest, best environments you'll ever be in. People standing on the ends. There's not a seat in there open. You got students from both schools on both sides in their little sections. You know, it's just an incredible environment. Now, at ours, you have 1,600. It's even better. And we're hard to beat at home, and that's why last night was a little bit tougher to swallow because the team that beat us, I at the beginning of the year, I said on paper, they're the best team in our conference. I think I told you that yesterday. And I still, looking at them, we could have changed a couple of things and won the game, but it just didn't go our way, and that's part of it. But they are really good, and they came into our house in that environment and won a game on the road. And you got to tip your hat to them because in small town Northeast Arkansas basketball, it is very hard to win on the road. And we're known for being very good at home. So for them to come in and get that win was huge for them. And we're just going to have to go and steal one on the road now. So
absolutely. And that's almost as much fun as winning in front of your own home crowd. When you can go in and silence a big crowd as a road team.
Yes.
That is a great feeling. I think I always, as a player and as a coach, I think I always enjoyed that even more than winning in front of your home fans. And
yes.
You know, as excited as the crowd might be to go in and shut down a crowd that is super excited and send them home with a loss was always a fantastic. A feeling that I enjoyed.
And we've been on. I don't want to say unfortunate because I think it's going to work out for us, but we're about to play our fourth road conference game out of our first five because one of our home games, we were supposed to have 2 and 3 before Christmas. Well, one of them, they ended up in the finals of the state football playoffs. And so
gotcha.
We were supposed to play them last Friday, so we have to postpone them until after Christmas. So we're going on the road. We're 3-0 on the road right now. We go on the road Friday. And if we're able to steal that one at Christmas, we're sitting 4-0 on the road and only have four more after Christmas in conference where we've still got 7 at home. So, you know, if we could go Friday and steal another one, then we, you know.
That sets you up pretty nice for the second half of the season.
Good. Yeah. Yep.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. I'm going to jump back to my second question from a half hour ago.
Okay.
So you mentioned at that point, you were talking a little bit about what it meant to be a high school coach. And you said that there were some parts of it that, you know, that were fun and some parts of it that were hard. So in your mind, give me one or two things that are the most fun about being a high school coach. And then give me one or two things that are the most difficult or most challenging about being a high school coach.
Okay. The most fun are pretty easy. For me, I love practice in the off season. I love, you know, watching these kids develop from March till basically September. I love that part. I love, you know, everything about it. You don't have the pressure of the games. You get to just teach the game of basketball, something that you love, and it's fantastic. The other thing, again, you know, you're getting to, and I tell my kids this all the time, you know, and sometimes when I'm mad at them, I'll throw this out there. I'm getting a paycheck on the 15th and 30th, no matter if you win or not. You know, the beauty of it is you're the ones that are going to get to remember these wins. You're the one. I'll still be here next year. You've got to make the most of this. And I think that's one of the most fun things is watching these kids take ownership of each year, you know, who's going to step up and watch these kids grow, like from a shy, you know, quiet 10th grader or 7th grader into a leader as a senior. That's something that really gets me going. I love that. I love watching that. You know, you try to cram a lot of stuff in outside of basketball. In a small town, you know, last week we had our Christmas parade. We're expected to be, we have a float, be in the parade.
You got to build that float yourself?
Which I enjoy. No, I have a ex-parent who loves doing that stuff, and he does it for us every year, which is huge. You know, finding people to help. We're in a community where, you know, there's a lot of talk right now in Arkansas about trying to go to, and I know the guy that got you and I in touch, he's all for a shot clock. And I am too, because we play fast. But I also went to our rival the other night, and they had two people sitting at the score table. That's frustrating. You know, one guy keeping the book, one guy keeping the clock and the scoreboard. And that puts a lot of pressure on the officials. That puts a lot of pressure on those two guys sitting there, especially for when sure. It's a packed house.
Yeah, that's a tough job.
You know, and I don't have that problem where I am because we have enough people in town that are wanting to be a part of it. But when I first got here, that was very hard to get people to, I'll do that every night for free. I mean, who wants to do that? I mean, all you can do is get yelled at if you screw something up. For free. Yeah, that's I really want to be a part of that. But now we've got that ironed out. You know, teaching, I enjoy teaching. Always have. I started at bigger schools, and therefore I had to teach. I taught economics, I've taught, you know, U.S. history, et cetera, et cetera. And so when you're, especially during season, when you're playing 30 to 35 games a year on Tuesdays, that Wednesday becomes pretty tough, especially when you went on the road and got home at midnight and you may have taken a loss the night before, and you got to get up the next day and go you don't want to say perform, but you've got to get up in front of kids and teach. And that becomes difficult at times.
You're not sitting in your office like an accountant.
No, I'm not. Not at all. And so, you know, I can't really just say there are bad things about it. You know, you've got parents sometimes that get on your nerves, that you have to deal with a little more than you want to, but that's what we kind of sign up for. We kind of know that. And that's the thing that I, you know, that was the beauty. I will say this. That's the beauty of me have being an assistant for 10 years. I got to see all of that before I took my first head coaching job. I had had some other offers. A couple of them didn't work out with my ex-wife not wanting to move. Some of them just didn't work out, me wanting them, et cetera. But I got to see all of those things, all of the bad parts. I got to see the good parts, but I also got to see the bad parts. And I'm a proponent of, I think no one should come straight out of college and be able to be a head coach. I think you should have to at least sit in that seat 18 inches to the left for 2 years. And it would do more for you, for these young guys, than they'll ever. And it was hard. It's not always easy. I'll just go ahead and tell you, being an assistant's hard, because you don't get to set your own schedule. You don't get to, you're there when the coach tells you to be there. You may suggest something. He may turn around and look at you like you're an idiot. But I wouldn't trade it for anything. I think it has led to success for me as a coach, because I did work under two great guys that were very open with me about what, you know, here's the good stuff, here's the bad stuff. You know, do you want to deal with that, or would you like to stay here with me? And that's part of it. You know, when we really complain, and I complain just like everybody else, but we knew it going in. You know what I'm saying? I mean, every coach says they didn't, we didn't know there's going to be this much pressure. Yes, you did. You knew that when it all said and done, you knew you were going to have to be expected to win more than you lose. I don't care what you say, you're expected to win more than you lose. Can you do that all the time at high school when you can't recruit? No. Okay, it at some point you run through a dry spell, but that dry spell better not last long. Otherwise, you're not really doing your job because you're not developing kids. And so, you know, I think the pressure of the job. I know a lot of people, you know, my friends included. They're sports fiends. They love, you know, and we're Razorback fans in Arkansas for the most part, where I grew up and my friends. And so, we've had a couple of bad years in football for sure. And so we know that, you know, being a coach, there's going to be pressure with it. And so when we choose that as our profession, then to complain about it is kind of an oxymoron. I mean, you knew it, accept it. You don't have to like it, but you've got to deal with it. And so I think those are good and bads. And I think you know what, I think you know it when you decide to do it.
When you went from being an assistant to being the head coach, even though you have sat and you've been an assistant for that long and you're having conversations with the head coach and you're observing and you've got an idea of what you're getting into, what was the most surprising thing to you about going from the assistant chair to the head coaching chair?
I say it quite often. It's the largest difference in 18 inches of anything on this earth. I could say whatever I wanted to on that, in that second chair, but he didn't have to listen to me. And so now you're making the decisions and what you say is final. And, you know, I remember my first year here, we started out 4-3, lost our first conference game, and I was going into Thanksgiving break, I was like, oh gosh, I might should have stayed where I was. I was following a guy. I mean, I followed a legend. I'll just be honest with Bill Taylor. Won 3 state championships at 2 different schools, and he was here, and he took Manila to state finals 3 years before I got here. And so when I got here and we didn't have success immediately, I was like, did I make the right decision? But at some point you have to say, okay, here I am. I have taken the leap. Now I'm going to work my freaking tail off to be as successful as I can possibly be. What's going to make me successful? And in my eyes, what's made me successful is my ability to get the most out of kids. My teams play extremely hard. I make the comment all the time, I'm never going to coach you your effort level. If you ever make me coach your effort, you might as well go put my practice stuff up and go find a PE class to join, because I'm not coaching your effort. And so once I got that first group to buy into, right, we're going to outplay everyone as far as effort every night, every day in practice, and I made everything a competition, all of a sudden the wins started coming. And so believing in yourself and your ability to be the head coach is the biggest obstacle when you sit on that bench as the assistant that long. You're asking, did I make the right choice? And then you, at some point, you have to say, all right, here it goes. I'm all in, and we're going to see if this works. And if it doesn't, then I obviously was not the right person. But I don't think, you know, anyone knows what it's like to be in that chair until they've been in that chair. And I say chair loosely because I don't sit down. I mean, I'm up moving. But that, you know, that head coaching, when you call a timeout and every eyeball is on you, all 10 eyeballs are looking at you for, hey, what do we need to do right now? No one can prepare you for that. No matter how much you assisted, I was given a lot of freedom. As an assistant coach, I always, at one of my stops, I subbed. I mean, he gave me the freedom to sub whoever I thought we needed in and out of the game. The other one, he had me do out of bounds plays. I got to draw plays at the end of games. He just handed me the freaking board. But it's not the same when every call you make, you know, it's your call and
your name's attached to it.
You're going to be held accountable, whether good or bad. And so, once you accept that, and once you realize it, and you say, you know what, this is what I signed up for, then it becomes just part of the job. But it's not an easy transition at all.
I think the longer, especially if you've been at one place for a long time, I think it definitely is difficult then to, I think you made a point that I'm not sure a lot of coaches are, you know, necessarily think about, and that is just that mental transition of going from thinking of yourself as an assistant, where, again, that pressure of making those decisions, even though you're throwing out suggestions all the time, or maybe you do get an opportunity to take control of the offense or the defense or timeouts or substitutions or whatever, still ultimately the decision rests with the head coach.
And absolutely.
I think there's a huge, huge mental transition. Forget about all the other stuff that goes along, but I just think in your own head, in that your inner voice, you know, talking to you saying, hey, you know, I now it's me. Like I can't rely on anybody else to make these decisions anymore. It's in my hands. And I think that had to be scary and exciting at the same time.
It's both.
That I'm sure it was.
Very.
I'm sure it was and is.
It still is. You're right. I talked to the guy that gave me my first job, the elementary job, 2 days ago. And I said, man, we're averaging like 23 wins a year over these last 7 years. And I told him, I said, this, you know, I'm still feel like I have to prove to myself that I belong here. And he's like, you got to stop doing that. And I went, well, tell me how. And he said, I will whenever I figure it out. And he's 24 years in. So I think we all have that inner question, you know, am I doing enough? You know, last night, after every game that we lose, I take it very personal, because I think, even though when I tell them, you know, I never get to shoot, I never get to pass, I never get to steal, did I prepare them enough for everything they saw last night? And then you go back and watch the film and you go, okay, we didn't execute that correctly. That's me not having repped it enough, or et cetera. And I think, you know, we all do that. Like he said, he still does it 24 years in. I'm 18 years in, but I'm only 8 years in as head coach. But he's been a head coach his whole career. And he said, I'll let you know whenever I figure it out. And I just start, I mean, we both start dying laughing. And I was like, it's going to be like this forever, isn't it? And he said, yes. And so I don't sure think is. It ever goes away. I think, you know, but I also think that's part of the joy of it. I think that, you know, you're proving to those kids, you're proving to yourself every day that you're willing to put yourself out there. And, you know, we're judged. I don't care what anybody says. It's one of the only professions on earth that other people think they can do better than us, even though they're not qualified.
That's so true. That's so true.
But we know that signing up, and that's why when right. people complain about it, I'm like, no. We know that, all of us. Now, I don't agree with it, but we know it when we sign up, that everybody in those stands think they can do our job better than we can if we don't do it right. I said, now, you know, if we're winning, then yeah, they're fine with us. But the minute we lose a game, oh, that's a bad choice. This is a bad choice. And it's so easy. And, you know, I do the same thing when I'm watching the Razorbacks or I'm watching, you know, college football, college basketball, whatever. And it's easy when you're not in the heat of it and people aren't screaming and kids running everywhere and officials not always making the right call. But, you know, I think that that's the beauty of sports is that it emulates life so much because that's life. I mean, things don't go your way. I wish they did all the time, but they just don't. And so how do you respond to it? And, you know, I think that's the greatest thing about coaching is that we get to see those kids in pressure packed situations and we put them in that hopefully daily. But at the same time, it doesn't take away that question of, did I do enough? And I think that's what drives good coaches is, you know, I think Mike Krzyzewski still to this day probably goes, okay, did I prepare enough? And he'll say, I think he's even said, you know, when he has those young teams that he doesn't feel prepared enough. And that's a coach's biggest fear is, did I do enough?
All right, so let me ask you this to go along with that.
Yes.
How do you go about improving yourself as a coach? So where do you go to? Do you have mentors that you go to? Do you read? Do you go to clinics? Do you watch tape? What is it that you're doing
yes.
to help yourself to develop the confidence that we're talking about, the mental fortitude to be able to say, hey, I'm getting better at this every day and I'm not perfect. I'm continuing to learn, but I know that I'm getting as prepared as I possibly can be.
I'll tell you this. I was raised a man-to-man person. I played man-to-man in college, high school, you name it. I coached man-to-man as an assistant. I coached man-to-man until last year. And I did not deviate. That was what we were going to do and we were going to do it right. And I didn't care who we played. We had a backup plan. If we got in foul trouble, we could go to this circle matchup zone that a backup plan. Well, I get last year's team and we've got six kids that are really good and don't need to come off floor much. And there's a guy that I followed a legend in my opinion, and he is a 1-3-1 guru. So I called him and I said, Bill Taylor, I need to meet with you. And he said, what do you mean? And I said, I want your 1-3-1. And he said, okay. So he and I and another coach went to a place to eat in Jonesboro. And I sat down and took notes from him just sitting there talking. Came back, watched Kermit Davis's gap zone, his 1-3-1 gap. And I took the two and kind of morphed them together. And we have played the 1-3-1 last year to a 23-6 record and the highest defensive efficiency team I've ever had. I was afraid we wouldn't be able to rebound out of the zone. The best defensive rebounding percentage I've ever had. And we're sitting here playing it again this year. We've got some length. Our lateral movement's not fantastic, so our man-to-man wasn't good. And so, yes, I go to mentors. I go to friends. I go to clinics as much as possible. I read anything I can get my hands on. I love reading. My wife and I were talking the other day, and she said, how many books you have? And I said, what do you mean? And she said, we've got books just all over the place, and they're out in the garage. They're, you know, and I said, I don't know. And I tried to start counting some of them, and I got, you know, I've always enjoyed reading even before I became a coach. But then when I became a coach, I started reading, you know, John Feinstein's my favorite. And he wrote a book, A March to Madness, one time. And Everybody knows him for, you know, obviously Season on the Brink. But that march to madness, it hooked me on reading about basketball. And before that, I was a fictional, you know, I like fiction. I'd read historical fiction, or I'd read, you know, John Grisham, whatever. And then I read that and I was like, oh, I can read this and enjoy it and learn stuff while I'm doing it. And so I became a reader of sports and, you know, leadership books and things like that. And so anything I can get my hands on that helped me, I was just like, I got the email, I was looking, and a matter of fact, I'm going to go meet Bill Taylor again this weekend. And he was the guru around here of a triangle and two. And I'm going to need it some this year, because we've got a couple teams in our conference that have two really, really good scorers and three guys who kind of fill space. And so I don't know how to teach it. I know what the purpose of it is, and I know that how to, you know, try and attack it, but it always gives me problems as a coach. And so I was like, well, if it gives me problems as a coach, I'll give somebody else problems. So I called him. He said, what are you doing Saturday? So I'm going to go meet him Saturday at a place in Jonesboro to eat. We always eat, by the way, if you haven't noticed. and we're going to sit down and we're going to talk triangle and two and how to teach it. And Rick Majerus has got a fantastic triangle and two DVD that he put out 6 or 7 years ago. You know, I remember that Utah team that he took to the finals in, I think, 97. And they did it primarily using triangle and two. And so I don't think there's one way to coach. I'm not that guy. I'm not the guy that thinks, hey, my way is the way. I've seen coaches who don't ever yell be successful. I've seen coaches who never get out of their seat be successful. I've seen coaches who throw chairs, obviously, be successful. And then the guys in between. And so for us to think that our way is the only way is very egotistical and stupid, in my opinion. And so I'll steal anything I can from any coach that it works, and I will read anything I can if it helps my players and if it helps our team. And so, yeah, I do all the things that you ask. I haven't been able to go to clinic in the last year, and I miss them. I loved them. Some of my best stories come from, you know, going to clinic with my buddies. And, yep. You know, they've moved. We used to have a Nike one over in Tunica, which was an hour away. Well, now they've moved it down to Biloxi. And so the closest one to us now is about a 5-hour drive. So we're trying to find, and I still haven't gotten to go to Point Guard College, and I'm going to try and make that trip either this year or next year. But yes, I don't think you can ever learn enough. You know, I look at these guys, Kevin Eastman comes to mind. Kevin Eastman, you know, knows more about basketball than has forgotten more about basketball than I'll ever know. And he's still trying to learn. And so, you know, guys like that are an inspiration, I think, to all of us, in that when we look at them, we're like, oh, y'all know everything. And then you'll see him at a clinic, and the minute he gets done teaching, he'll sit down with a notebook and start taking notes. And to me, that's what it's about. That's where I feel like you keep your edge as a coach. You never think that your way is it, and that you've got to continue to improve. And if you'll do that, you know, you don't always have to change style. You may, you know, I may read 5-6 books and come away and with one thing. But if I came away with one thing that helped our team, then it was worth it. So, you know,
what's something you've read recently that's good that other coaches might enjoy?
Hang on just a second. I just went blank on it. It's John Feinstein, and it's about the American League, Lehigh, and it was right after he wrote
The Patriot, the Patriot League. Yeah,
Patriot League. Have you read that?
That's the only reason I know. So
it's a fantastic book. I just finished it, and I didn't even know he had it out. I just every now and then when I run out.
That book's been out for a long time.
Forever. Yeah. I didn't know anything about it, and to read it and see the level of play that they got from those kids that had never had a scholarship. Well, it was it sold itself as the poor man's Ivy League, when in reality, and I know it's changed now, you know, that when I read it, was like, I thought they gave scholarships. And then I look at the date on it, and I was like, well, this thing was written like 12 years ago.
Right.
And so, you know, that's a book that I would, you know, anybody to read. I think, you know, I read a John Gordon book not too long ago, and I'm drawing a blank on the name of it.
He's got so many good ones.
Championship Mindset, maybe, something along that line. It's fantastic. Anything you can get your hands on from him, read it. And you will get something from it. And Feinstein's more of a storyteller, where, you know, Gordon's going to give you material, you know, like things that you can really use. But I love, like, you know, the Miracle on St. Anthony's. And reading through how he built that, and, you know, you think sometimes that you're too hard on your kid, and then you see what some of the things that one of the greatest high school coaches ever used to motivate those kids. And obviously they're inner city kids compared to my rural Delta kids. So he's working with a totally different crew than I am, but you look at it and you can find something to correlate to where you are in your journey as far as becoming the coach that you want to be.
Yeah. So, and I think what you said, you know, over the last 15 minutes that I keep coming back to in my head is you got to coach to your personality and you got to be who you are. And for some guys that means they're a little louder, you know, they're going to be more up on top of their players all the time. And then there's other guys who are more laid back and they can sit down during the game, or they can be more relaxed. And I think you, whichever one of those you are, or wherever you fall on that spectrum, if you try to be the other one,
it doesn't work.
It just doesn't work. If you're a calm, easygoing person, you try to become a yeller and a screamer, that comes across completely false. And conversely, if you're somebody who has, you know, who's loud and has to yell, and then you try to suddenly go silent, I can guarantee that doesn't work either. So
it's not gonna work.
You got to coach to your personality.
Agree.
All right. I want to ask you before we start wrapping up, we're coming up on about an hour and 20 minutes. Just give me an idea of, we've talked a little bit, danced around it a little bit, parents. Give me an idea of how you engage your parents in your program so that you can get them on board and supportive of what you're trying to do there in Manila. How do you go about engaging parents?
First thing we do, I'll have a meeting about every 3 years with all the parents, and I try to include 7 through 12. In a town this size, I know most of them. And about eighth grade, they'll ask me a question, and I'll say, ask your son. And so from that point on, basically, I communicate with the boys. And I expect them to start showing some responsibility, and they are to talk to the parents. And the parents don't, it's not that they can't contact me. It's not that they don't contact me. It's just that we start setting a precedent when they're about in eighth grade that if they want to know something about what we're about to do, they can ask their kid first. And if their kid doesn't know, then yes, they're free to ask me. But the first thing I'm going to say is, did you ask so-and-so? And they'll be like, yes, and he has no idea. And I'm like, well, that doesn't surprise me. Here's what we're doing. We don't do anything special as far as we don't have retreats or anything like that with our parents. Our parents are, you know, they're hardworking people. They appreciate their kids being held accountable. They appreciate their kids being made to work hard. Like I said, during the summer, we practice every, you know, 4 days a week. And we usually go 10 to 12. And so in the 8 years I've been here, every one of the parents wants their kid to have a job, of course, but they're willing to let them do basketball first. And then we have a water park here and the city will employ our kids for us. So that helps a lot. But parent problems don't exist if you have good communication. And I communicate with our parents. I'll make a group text every year, senior parents, junior parents, sophomore parents, ninth grade parents, 8th grade parents. And a month before Thanksgiving, here's our Thanksgiving schedule. a month before Christmas, here's what we're planning on our Christmas schedule being. I think as much information as you can give them, the happier they are. And I don't want to keep them out of our program. I think they can be humongous assets when they're on board. And I think they can be just as big of problems when they're not. And so I don't look as, you know, some coaches don't want parents in anything. I don't care. If a parent wants to come watch practice, come watch practice. I don't give a flip. I'm going to be who I am. If you're there or you're not. If you've got a problem and you think your kid didn't get playing time, first thing I'll say is, why don't you come watch him practice? And sometimes they show up, sometimes they don't. But I haven't had that question in about 5 years. So, you know, as far as parental problems in Manila, they're just not a lot. And, you know, as being the AD as well, I can kind of talk to them from an administrative side as well as from a coach's side, which does help as well.
Yeah, the communication piece of it is key.
It's huge.
I think anybody, whether you're in business or whether you're in education as a teacher or an administrator, that proactive communication before you end up having problems is really so key, that if the first time a parent hears from you is when there's a problem, that's usually when you run into difficulty. Whereas if you've established a rapport with that parent beforehand, then things tend to go a little bit smoother. Once, if there does arise a need for a difficult conversation, if you've already established a relationship with those parents, it just makes things go far,
I'm active on Facebook and Twitter, and I have every parent basically on there. And after each game, I don't care if we win, lose, doesn't matter how mad I am, something's going on social media about our team and the score. And, you know, I'm not always positive, but if I'm really short on social media, they know I'm upset about the way we played. And they know that they need to wait until tomorrow to talk to me usually. And so it's just, you know, once you've been in a place for any amount of time, and you make yourself available to parents, then I found that, you know, some of those problems just work themselves out. Because they know who you are. They know, even if they see you wearing their kid out, they know that you love that kid. And they know, even when they're upset at you at that time, but they know after the ball game, that I have that kid's best interest at heart. And so therefore, usually it's pretty smooth around here when it comes to parents.
That's a great way to wrap it up. Go ahead, Lee, and share how people who have listened to the show tonight, if they want to reach out to you, whether that's on Twitter or via email, let them know how they can get in touch with you. And then if there's anything else that we didn't hit on tonight, you want to make one final parting shot,
okay,
and then I'll come back on and we'll wrap up the episode.
I told you before that my wife says I don't talk very much, but if it came to basketball, I'd be able to talk, and I think you can see that now.
Absolutely.
On Twitter, it's just at Coach Wimbo. Capital C, Coach, and then capital W-I-M-B-O. I'm on there quite a bit. I put a lot of videos of our kids on there. And, you know, I haven't figured out all the Instagram and all that. I use Twitter and Facebook. That's about it. My email is Wimberly, W-I-M-B-E-R-L-E-Y-L, at manelaschools.org. I'll be happy to send anything that we have. We're a dribble drive team. I started studying it when Vance Wahlberg came out with it, started playing with things differently. We have a modified version of it, and each year it becomes modified differently depending on who our personnel is. Be more than happy to share any of that with anybody that is interested in dribble drive. Like I said, was a man-to-man guy. Now I am, as of right now, and probably for the next 2 to 3 years coming, looking at our personnel, we're going to be a pretty big, gapped out 1-3-1 team. So if you want some information on that, I'll be happy to share that with you. You know, I don't think there's any secrets in basketball. I really don't. I think the best coaches are the best thieves. And, you know, the one thing that I'd leave you, any coach with, make your number one priority show up. Because no matter what, your kids are going to be, no matter if they're going to be good husbands, if they're going to be good fathers, if they're going to be good employees, if they're going to be good basketball players, good college students, the first thing they've got to do is show up. And they've got to show up every day, whether they feel good, whether they got a little headache, whether their sinuses are messed up. So that's kind of been our mantra, I guess, if you'd say. You know, every kid knows that if I say, what have we built our success on? We show up, coach. We show up every day. And, you know, that's kind of just, that's as simple as I can make it.
That's great. That's a great way to end it. Coach Jason and I have the same feeling about the podcast. We just keep showing up and making podcasts.
Just keep showing up, man.
Just keep showing up. As long as you keep showing up, somebody's out there listening.
Somebody is out there.
So Lee, listen, this was fantastic. We can't thank you enough for spending an hour and a half with us tonight. It's been an absolute pleasure. And to everyone out there, we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
As you've listened to the Hoopheads podcast, one common topic that continually comes up in our conversations is character. I'm fortunate to be associated with the Positive Coaching Alliance, a national nonprofit movement that provides valuable tools, training, and resources for coaches, athletes, parents, and administrators that is centered around sports and educational psychology and organizational behavior research. PCA combines this research with practical advice from a national advisory board of top pro and college athletes and coaches who utilize PCA principles at the highest levels of competition. Through a partnership with our local Cleveland chapter of the PCA, we are pleased to offer a discount code to allow you, our listeners, to take a PCA online course for just $20. To take advantage of this offer, visit the store on positivecoach.org and enter the discount code HOOPHEADS20. That's HOOPHEADS20 with two capital H's. Coaches, I hope you'll take advantage of this great offer from the Positive Coaching Alliance and help us continue to grow the game.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.